A look at the local high school sports scene, from coaches and athletes to a preview of this week's games. It's the Rudin Report on WICC. Now, your host, Dave Rudin.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Rudin Report Live. I'm Dave Rudin. Have a good show for you today. We got a lot of action, some wild stuff that happened the past week on the boys' basketball circuit. And we're going to venture into girls' basketball some on this show during the course of the season. And joining us a little later, and he actually has ties to boys' basketball as well, as we'll discuss, is Fairfield Ward coach Dave Danko. I call him Mr. 500 now. He got his 500th win on Tuesday night, and we'll talk to him a little bit later. But first, we're going to stick with boys' basketball. We've got four undefeated teams. I saw a couple of them this past week, and I want to talk about the one of the four that I haven't yet. First of all, before we get into everything, let me welcome my co-host, Mike Walsh. Mike, how you doing?
Good, Dave. Good. Good morning.
Good to talk to you. Yeah, we've already talked a bit today, but you know where we're going to go with this, but I always talk about how you talk me home after games. Fridays, after I leave the gym, I talk to you on my ride home. I tell you about my game. You tell me about what's gone on from all the streams that you watched, and you're giving me play-by-play of the Ridgefield-St. Joseph game as I was leaving. You told me that Ridgefield had blown a huge lead, and then as we're talking, it's like, oh, wow, TJ Wright just hit a shot. St. Joseph went up. They're going to win this game. And there were 2.5 seconds to go, and we're talking a little bit more. And then all of a sudden, it's, wow, Ridgefield won, half-court shot. So I want to talk about Ridgefield, which had a wild week, which is undefeated and is pretty topical because they blew fourth-quarter leads. And we can talk about, is the glass half full or the glass half empty right now with Ridgefield? But they came away with a 67-66 road win. They were outscored 30-14 in the fourth quarter after they had a big lead. But Jay Genova, highly touted sophomore who finished with 22 points, including four threes. And I don't know how he reached the basket on this shot. You can see it on all my social media. But he double clutched from half court and somehow the ball found nothing but net. You saw more of the game than I did. What more impressed that they won another close game or concerned that they lost a big lead?
Well, I think the fact that it was more impressive that they hit that short shot. I've seen buzzer beaters, and I just thought that the buzzer beater was going to be with 2.1 seconds. TJ Wright with a very nice pull-up jump shot to put St. Joe's ahead. And then Ridgefield calls the timeout and set up a play, which I thought Coach McClellan had the great quote saying, we practice it almost every day, but we never make it. And in this game, they made it. I mean, I saw the kid take the shot, and it looked like it was no way it's going to go in. Like you said, he double clutched, and there was a line drive more than anything else. And it did go in, though, and, you know, sent everybody on St. Joe's into shock, and everybody in Ridgefield celebrating. It was really ironic in that there's a second game in a row, as you talked about, that they had won at the buzzer. Alex Hickey hit another shot with 2 seconds to go in the prior game against West Hill. Now, the fact that they, blown the lead, give a little credit to St. Joe's and West Hill for coming back. I'd rather be on the end of Ridgefield winning those games and maybe learning something and how to get better than to lose a tough game like that. But, it's the FCAC and anything can happen.
Yeah, certainly some of the things that are impressive. You look at the scoring leaders and you have Genova, who may be the next in a long line of top guards there who's been playing well. And another guy on the team we haven't really talked at all about this season, Jack Winstanley, who scored 12, along with Peter Sapowski, the center we know. They're, you know, they're getting these big leads. They're playing the games on the road. They've had a couple, you know, they had the Stanford game as well right before New Year's. That was a close game. Three games that they could have lost and found ways to win. Obviously, if they lose these games, the narrative is completely different. And, yeah, as you said, T.J. Wright, who had 31 points and is playing like T.J. Wright, he scored his 1,000th point earlier in the week. But Genova, I guess, hit a shot with 12.5 seconds to go to put them up, and then T.J. Wright hit the shot with 2 seconds to go, and then Genova comes back. So good win for them. And then, as you alluded to, 3 days earlier against West Hill, They have a lead. They get outscored in the fourth quarter, 26-17. And then Alex Hickey, we were wondering when he was going to come back. It turned out he came back Tuesday night, and a heck of a comeback. And he hits a shot with 2 seconds left. And rather than two losses, we're talking about Ridgefield being 6-2 and 4-0 in the league. I know, talking basically to everybody that's seen them, I haven't yet. The talk is not the same Ridgefield team. Yeah, the question is, it's not the same Ridgefield team in early January. Will it be the same Ridgefield team in late February, which is when they care about the most?
Well, to be honest with you, Dale, I think it's been a plus in that Andrew has been able to develop the team and get wins along with it. I think by the end of the year, when the playoffs come, they're going to be a very dangerous team because, as you said, they have some size in Peter Stefkowski, and they have the guards that seem to be coming along, and Alex Hickey kind of bringing them all together. So, you know, I wouldn't want to play Ridgefield in the playoffs, that's for sure. By that time, they'll be the team, the best that they can be. And, you know, again, like I say, to win and gain confidence and develop at the same time is a pretty good formula.
Yeah, I don't know if they bristle at the fact that we sort of don't talk them up like we usually do this time of year. They've won the regular season title a long stretch, and they had won 4 or 5 FCAC titles in a row, and I go back and forth with Drew on this one, but the COVID year is, as we all do, is an asterisk year, but they did win that year as well. But they haven't been to the final in 2 years, so they're not used to that. I know they don't want to make a hat trick out of it, but, you know, you look around the league, and I don't know that there's no world beaters out there. You know, Staples has been a clear-cut top team so far. They were highly touted. They've lived up to it. They're one of the four unbeaten teams. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. The one thing is, the you know, you get these kids like Genova, Winstanley, who start having this success now, and Ridgefield's gonna be a different team when they play their first playoff game than they are now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, we talk about Staples. I think Ridgefield matches up pretty well with Staples. And it's, as I said, I think last week, it's kind of ironic in that Staples has been upsetting Ridgefield the last couple of years. Who knows? Maybe this is the year that Ridgefield upsets Staples. And I'm not sure I would call it an upset because, as I say, they match up pretty well, especially inside with Peter Sefkowski. And, you know, you say the young guards are coming along. And as I said before, Alex Hickey is kind of a glue to keep them together. So I would not discount Ridgefield, and certainly in the FCAC playoffs and championship race.
Yeah, we'll see. I won't see him this week. I'm actually taking the ride up to Ridgefield on Friday, but I'm going to go see the I haven't done a girls' basketball game yet this year, and it's with the boys' schedule. It's a good night. I'm going to go up and see Ridgefield and Stanford, which should be a real interesting game in the girls' race. And then I know Ridgefield plays Ward at home Tuesday, so we'll see if my car can make it up to Ridgefield for twice in 3 days. But why don't we take a break right now? And when we come back, I want to talk about the two Fairfield teams that I got to see this week, and they're also unbeaten. We'll get to that after we take this break. You're listening to the Rudin Report Live on WICC.
Teams, athletes, coaches, and everything that makes local high school sports great. Now, back to the Rudin Report on WICC with Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and Mike and I are kicking around the last week of action and looking today mostly at some of the unbeaten teams. And I want to bounce over to the two Fairfield schools. I got to see both of them this week. And why don't we go most recent, which was Friday night. And this was one of the stranger games that I've covered. Ludlow took the trip to New Canaan. Ludlow jumped out to an 18-0 lead, 15-0 after the first quarter. I don't know that I've ever seen this before, but New Canaan actually turned the ball over seven times in their first eight possessions. And this game had blowout all over it. And the lead got to Ludlow, led by as many as 22 points. And then to New Canaan's credit, just put on they looked like they could run a really good offense in the second half. They've struggled at that end of the court. And they got the lead down to as many as 8 points with a couple of minutes left, where it's still within shouting distance. And then Ludlow stabilized the game and pulled away. New Canaan hit a shot after to make it a five point win. Mike, first I want to talk about Ludlow, and you know I'm impressed by them. They're definitely a team that could this year maybe finish in the top four, be a three seed, a four seed, a five seed. And Ryan Torello, who missed all of last year with a torn labrum he sustained during football season, he's back. He's led them in scoring every game, and he put up 30 points against New Canaan.
Yeah, no, I've been high on Ludlow since we started the podcast. John Daly, first of all, does a great job with his adjusting to his talent. And, as you say, Torello has really started to show what he is, and it's an all-FCAC player. They're off to a good start, and now they prove that they could beat a tough New Canaan team on New Canaan's home court. But the start that they got off to, 18-0, is kind of like incredible.
You turned the game off then.
I certainly did. I switched over to several of the other games. But and then the first half wasn't that much better. I think it was, 30-12 or something. And, I kiddingly told you, I said, maybe New Canaan should just start firing up three-pointers and hoping to get the rebound and put the ball in. I'm sure that's not what happened. Danny was able at halftime to make adjustments. I thought the biggest adjustment that he made was he went to a 1-3-1 half-court trap, which really gave Ludlow some trouble and, helped them to generate a little bit more offense and allowed them to get back within the 8 points. So I think Danny's finding out about his team also. I know he has the football players are starting to round into basketball shape. They're tough, they're physical, and they'll come along offensively. He does have the one scorer who I think he had 18 points against Ludlow. So that as disappointed as Danny was, I'm sure, with the first half, he had to be encouraged with the second half as far as, what transpired there. But I like Ludlow. I like the fact that they have a couple of scores, Charlie Murphy being the other one. And, they have a point guard who seems to be in control of things. In this league, I mean, they have a chance to do some damage. So as far as Ludlow is concerned, I'm glad to see they're doing well, and I think that Danny Melzer can be encouraged with New Canaan from what I saw in the second half.
Yeah, Charlie Mahoney put up 13 points, and he's been a good secondary scoring sidekick, and I don't even think from what I've seen that he's hit his stride yet. But another common trend, and I interviewed Torello after the game, and he didn't talk about his offense or his 30 points. He talked about how hard they play on defense, and between seeing Staples already and New Canaan for a second time and seeing Ludlow, I don't know if we're going to find three teams that play better on defense. And, the way the league is constructed right now, scoring's been on a downward cycle for a while. Some teams have a really top go-to scorer. There aren't a lot of teams that have two of them. If you can play really good defense right now, you can win a lot of games. Would you agree, looking back at where the league was and where it is now, that defense is even more of a factor, that you could win even more now with defense than you could have back when you were coaching?
Well, I think defense has always been important, to be honest with you, Dave. But in this league where there is some offensively challenged teams, defense makes it even more imperative for them to be successful. And, the Ludlow game, I went back to it when they started coming back. That's the one thing I talk about John Daly and the defense that they play. They play really good defense, but they're also they adjust to what the other team is doing. He looked to me like he switched to a 2-3 zone toward the end of that game, which neutralized the comeback that New Canaan was making. Now, maybe it was only for a couple possessions that I saw. But that's the adjustments that coaches made on the defensive end that I think can help a team to be successful.
John does a great job there. His teams never underachieve. Sometimes they overachieve, and it's been off and on in terms of what kind of talent pool he's had to work with. I think right now this is one of his more talented teams. And the way the league is set up, I thought about this. I've never really said this before. I'll see. Do you know what college coach that John, I think, looks real similar to? And I'll give you a little bit of a hint. John has a much more pleasing personality than the college coach I'm thinking of.
I have to take a wild guess, but... You're not talking about Hurley, are you?
No. He doesn't look like Hurley. You think he looks a little bit like Mick Cronin?
Like who?
Mick Cronin at UCLA.
Oh, impossible.
I think there's a little bit similarity there, though. John's never going to bash his players or complain about their effort after a game. And, John's got a much more pleasing personality. But I always thought he looked a little bit like Mick Cronin. I thought about it more this week just because Cronin
certainly possible, Dave. I watch him on the sidelines. He's like coaching with his kids. He's going up and down and waving his hands. And
he's pretty fiery on the sideline.
Yeah, he is, and he I think kids would get into that too. B, they see the coaches all, and I think most of the coaches in the FSAC are that way. Very rarely do you see a coach just sit down there and give out his signals. I mean, the emotion that a coach shows on the sideline, I think, is can be a positive.
Yeah, going over to New Canaan, my first impression, I don't know where they're going to play out. Their offense, I don't know if their offense will end up being good enough to get them in the top eight. I don't know what to make. The two games I saw them were Staples and Ludlow, so they played maybe the two best or two of the best defensive teams in the league. So I don't know against a lot of other teams if the offense will play better. The one thing, and this bodes well, he does not get cheated out of a second of playing time from any of his kids. Those kids... I mean, it was 18-0. It was seven turnovers in eight possessions, and they could have just gone in the tank at that and lost by 30 points, and that would have been the case. For them to rebound from that, and Yeah, they just play hard. And it's not just, I'm not going to say it's a football thing, because it's not a football thing. It's everybody on that team. I haven't seen too many teams that play that hard for all 32 minutes.
No, you know, I agree with you as far as that's concerned. And we just talked about coaching with John Daly. Even when it was like 15-0 and 18-0, Danny was Coach Melzer. He was clapping and getting excited and getting the kids going and giving them positive vibes. And, you know, that has a lot to do when a team doesn't quit, but when they see the coach doesn't quit. So, I mean, again, kudos to him for that.
You know, this is his 20th year as a coach. Makes me feel really old.
20 years?
Yeah, he told me this is his 20th season coaching. You know, going back to Stanford and being an assistant and everything, but this is his 20th year as a coach.
Wow, and I remember him when he was a little league pitcher at 10 years old down in Springdale. So that must make me feel real old. I am real old, I guess.
Yeah, me too. I covered him all through when I was at the Advocate, all through his Stanford High days. But Henry Chandra, he's the new Canaan player that probably got talked up the most in the preseason. He's not one of the football players for whatever that's worth, but he scored 18 points and he hit 4 threes. And, you know, if they can get him free to shoot like that, that's going to make a big difference with the defense. And then after that, you have Luke Robinson, the quarterback. And I got to almost stop talking football at this point. We're kind of beating it to death. But he scored 14 points, but you know, they scored 41 points in the second half. That's a pretty good half of offensive basketball. So if that's something that they can sustain and be more consistent, you know, I like them battling for a 6-7-8 seed.
Well, it certainly gives them a chance, and I think a lot of it had to do with went to that trapping defense, 1-3-1, and the pressure that they put on. And they may have to do that to generate offense as they go forward.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But that was an interesting game. And why don't we take a break right here? I see our guest is just called in, and we're going to get after this break to Fairfield Ward girls basketball coach Dave Danko. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
He knows everything you need to know about local high school sports. Back to the Rudin Report with Dave Rudin on WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
All right, we're back, and we're going to take a little break from boys basketball, though my next guest certainly has ties to that. Trying to think... The coaches, people I go back with the farthest in my career as a sports writer here, and I think Jeff Braemeyer is number one because that was my first year. But I think our guest right now is number two. My third year as a sports writer, I was sports editor of a twice weekly in Fairfield Ward. Actually, it was Andrew Ward, I think, at that time. And our guest was a senior on the basketball team, was a big part of they were the Eagles at the time, that made it to the state semifinals, and he was my male athlete of the year, and he'll remember vividly what adjective I used to describe him. But most recently this week, he won his 500th game, only the 14th girls basketball in state history to do that, and it's Dave Danko, and he's with us right now. Dave, how you doing?
Good. Good morning, guys. Good to be here, and thank you for thinking of me and all that.
Always good to have you on. You have vivid memories before we get to 500 of the. You remember that season pretty well.
Yeah, what a wonderful season! I was fortunate to have the tutelage of Mike Abraham, who really enforced core values of striving for goals and working hard. I mean, Mike. Kind of the opposite, but he was more of a defensive coach. And every day he prepared us that we were the worst team in the FCAC and that we were going to get beat. And he always looked to challenge us. And what he saw, what we thought then was, he's crazy. But we bought into it. We bought into it and we thrived. And he here I am now because of him. And I owe him, the other day I told him I owe him everything with the loss of my parents, and he taking a role of guiding me to Southern Connecticut and get involved with me. But I owe he and his brother, Glenn Macno, Gus Lindeen, a great deal of gratitude for where I am now.
We'll backtrack to your boys' career again in a second, but 500 wins, and kind of they made you sweat it out a little bit. Lost a lead in the fourth quarter. You played Trumbull, and they make a run. You get the game's tied, and Peyton McIntosh is on the foul line with 0.5 seconds to go. You weren't looking, but she hit the first shot, missed the second, and you'll always remember her as the person who gave you the winning point to win number 500. First of all, what I saw the pictures my photographer captured of you. What was it like in the moment?
Again, having a lead, and here we go. We're going into overtime. We run a great pick and roll with her diving down. That Ryan Goldman set her up perfect, and she went to the basket. Lucky we had enough time on the clock where, if you watch the film, she got a little hit on her shoulder, which allowed her to go to the free throw line. But prior to that, she was 0-for-4 on the free throw line. And, I was just talking to my parents, looking at the back, say, we need this. Let's get this over with. She could do this. And from the film, the ball hits the back of the rim, goes up about 2 feet, and then pops back down, and the rest is history. But it was wonderful to get in the gym with so many people, the alumni, the youth group that I coach, everybody was very heartwarming. And, again, it's something that I'll always cherish. And, yes, Peyton was the lead girl that will always be in this memory.
You said you weren't watching. Where were you looking?
I was at the water cooler.
How did you know she made it? You just could hear the reaction from the crowd?
Everybody, yeah, I turned around. I just watched everybody jumping up and down.
Few people are as tied to a school as you are. You bleed Ward Red. You go back to your years as a player. You've coached there now for three decades. You're in both the FSEAC and the State Girls Basketball Halls of Fame. You're a site director when you're out of season. What is it about your ties? What is it about Ward that you've had this love affair and never left?
Really, again, I was at St. Emory's. I was in the grammar school leagues, and I was 100% going to St. Joe's. Unfortunately, before we won a New England championship, my father passed away of his third heart attack at the age of 52. My mom was working in Bridgeport at LP McAdams, and at that time with Vito Martelli, we just could not get transportation up there. And my mother said, we were getting letters from Bud Niddle, Ed Benjamino. I was getting handwritten letters of come to Ward and just look at the facility before your decision on St. Joe's. And I met Mike Abraham and Glenn Macno. And again, they invited me up there to play the open gym in the spring with them. And it was probably the best thing in my life that it went that way. I really wanted to play for Vito. I visited Vito. I visited his grave. I have a great deal of respect for the Montelli family. And, things happen for a reason. And I guess with this, it guided me into where I am now. And, with Ed Benjamino back in the late, early 80s, my brother was taking me to the baseball games. And, the head coach here, I'm a 7th, 8th grader, coming up to me and saying, you got to be a Crimson Eagle. You fit us. You fit our cloth and what we want to do and how we want to succeed. And just watching Ed Benjamino and his baseball team in the early 80s really, really got me excited. And that kids got involved. And when I walked into the program, me and a guard carry here, we were welcomed. We were welcomed right from the start. And, it was a privilege to play for Glenn Macno, Mike Abraham, and Gus Lindeen later years of hiring me.
I'm going to bring Mike into this. I know, Dave, you coached against him actually for a year when he took over his final season as head coach with the girls' basketball program. But, Dave, I know you have a fond all-star memory with Mike.
Oh, Mike, I was selected to the East-West All-Star Game. Mike was coaching, and we had this guy, Rufus Friedman, that was a monster from Waterbury. That in the FSAC, we had guys, but I never saw this big guy like this. I mean, we had Trout, we might go and name some stuff. But Mike goes, hey, you're starting here. You're starting at the point. As I go out there, he goes, hey, Danko, don't make me look bad. And, you know, it went. I scored the first basket of the game. The ball came to me off the thing. I broke down. Boom, I scored. I was able to play. I felt good. But I feel honored to be able to play for Mike, you know, with his history. But Mike and I have a good relationship. He respected my coach, Abraham. And I think he has a fond relationship with me. I have a great deal of respect. And I'll always remember that. I always remember that. I always remember our conversations, our text messages back and forth. And then he became the girls' coach. He wanted an upper hand. Hey, Danko, what do you have on Richfield? Hey, Danko, what do you think of this team? What did you play? And we interacted on a coaching aspect, which is kind of fun, knowing that he was the boys' coach. And I had an opportunity to do that with him, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Mike, how come you started him?
Well, I started him because I was a pretty smart coach, and I always thought that point guard was the most important position on the floor. And especially one with a lot of confidence. And Dave had a lot of confidence in himself, and, you know, he had a start. And we were successful. He knew all the players on the other team anyway. He was like having a coach on the I could tell at an early age that he was going to be a coach on the floor, even when he played. And, you know, Dave, I really admire it. Not too many people do what you do for so many years. I mean, I was crazy enough to do it for 40-something years. And, you know, you mentioned the late Vito Montelli, who did it, you know, for about 50 years. But for you to spend 30-plus years at Ward, I mean, to me that's a tremendous compliment. And, you know, I'll always owe you, by the way. When I first took over the Trinity Catholic Girls, I called you. And I said, Dave, what is this girls' basketball all about? Well, what do I have to do to help these young ladies? And you said, layups and foul shots. You make layups and foul shots, you're going to win games. So, and I got to tell you that every practice that I started there with the girls at Trinity, we had layups. And if you missed one, we'd start over again. And then we did foul shots. And if you'd miss it, we'd run. And as it turned out, that we ended up being a pretty good team and going all the way to the state championship. So I owe you for that advice, and I've always respected you as a coach. You actually gave me a couple out of bounds plays when I was coaching the boys, one of them which helped us win a state championship. So thanks for your help, and congratulations on 500. And you know, keep it going, because you know, you're the kind of guy that. I think the girls need, but also the community of Fairfield needs, and even throughout the state, we need people like you.
I appreciate that, Mike. Again, I've had mentors like you, even Coach McDougal, guys that we go way back. The guy, John at Greenwich, the AD at Greenwich, when I went to the class and got certified, always followed me. John Kutso, Nick Zioli. I would get letters from these guys, and I would, you know, always look at it and appreciate that they come out of their way, you know, like a Jerry McDougal, a football coach, and would write me a little letter. I'd get a little letter in the mail. Keep it up, Coach. Congratulations. And Vito, all you guys are legendary that I looked up, and I wanted to be like you guys, and I still strive and keep my core values. You've been to Trinity. You're Trinity Catholic. I mean, you're legendary in its own right. I mean, I'm just on the bottom floor on this coaching thing. You're up in the penthouse with all your wins and what you've done. So I strive to do that. I appreciate those kind words. I want to continue coaching. I love my town. I love Andrew Ward. I'm so happy and grateful there. I have the support of my athletic director, Gina DiGiacomo, Paul Cabana, Mike Testani, our superintendent. We have a good core, and they back sports and they back the coaches. And again, the Ward community has a solid group of coaches that all support each other.
Dave, you know, you aspired back in the days to maybe get into coaching with the boys, and then your mentors, the Abrahams, came back to to coach the girls' basketball team, and they asked you to come coach out of Southern and give it a year, and now you look at where things stand, and you look at that rearview mirror, and it's like you said, things happen for a reason. Look what happened. You decided to try girls basketball for a year, and what is it, man? What's it been like coaching females, and when you were involved in male basketball, and what does this all mean to you?
Yeah, I never had any interaction with female sports or going to female games. I was so gung-ho with the basketball at Southern, the men's leagues afterwards, and everything with that. And I got that call. I was so excited that I thought Mike took over the boys program. He and Dave are going to be coaching the boys program. And they sat me down, and I kind of made a face in my immaturity. It's like, no way. Girls, I just can't. I don't have the patience. I've never been around that. And they said, son, they go, listen here, just coach basketball. Think of it as basketball. And I've remembered that since 1990, and I believe in that. You know, and to this day, whether it's boys or girls, I've had interaction with boys teams during the summer league. It's just, I'm coaching basketball. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of what they said. And like you said, here I am, you know, over 34 years, 31 years as a head coach, doing it.
Well, Dave, you and I have become real close friends just from all we've gone through, and usually we're busting on each other more than anything. But you know, it was my pleasure, and it was an honor to be able to honor you along with Jack McFarland at Staples when I had my Rudin Report Awards night recently. And I, as much as I tease you, I do say it, maybe not enough, but publicly, I have a lot of respect for what you do, not just because of the wins, but there are a lot of girls out there who are better people because you coach them.
Thank you, Dave. Again, that was a wonderful event. You see all the pride and all the kids and all the support that were there for all the schools that coaches were being honored. It was incredible what you do. I say that. I still say this to the day, that you don't get honored enough of what you do and what you do for kids. And likewise, you're out there for the benefit of the kids, try to promote them, make them feel good, make them have a warm story, but also promote the league. And you don't get commended enough on your effort and what you do and how you do things. So I know Mike could agree. I mean, you're always there. As we've gotten older, we've become really good friends from the beginning to now, and I cherish that. And again, I continue. You have a new part in your, you know, with the Rudin Report now, and it seems to be growing, and it seems to be successful, and you deserve that. You deserve that continued success.
I really appreciate that a lot coming from you, and now we can go back to busting on each other again when we talk next week.
All right, that's a deal. That's a deal.
Well, Dave, I'm glad we were able to get you on. You're Mr. 500. You're 502 now and counting, and I hope you add to that total. And thanks a lot for taking the time here. Congratulations on the success to date, and I wish you and the Mustangs all the best going forward this season and beyond.
Again, thanks to you and Mike. And yes, go Mustangs. That's definitely right.
Congrats, Dave.
Mike, good to talk to you. Good to talk to you.
Take care.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, guys. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thanks for coming on. That was Fairfield Ward girls basketball coach Dave Danko. We're going to take another break here, and then Mike and I will finish up and bounce around, go back to the boys. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Fall high school sports lives right here on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Now, back to the Rudin Report and your host, Dave Rudin.
A team we've talked about a little bit this season. I got to see them Tuesday night for the first time at Trumbull, where they pulled away late for a 71-53 victory. My impression, I know you've watched them a little bit after watching them last year, is they're a much more experienced and seasoned team that's going to make them dangerous. I thought last year the guards sometimes rush shots, and it was almost like hot potato, the first open shot, take it, rather than be patient. Their guards were not like that on Tuesday. I thought there were times they didn't get the ball in enough to center Jack Kramer, and they certainly did that. He led a balanced attack with 16 points, and he knew when to take his guy on to the basket and when to kick the ball out and get open looks for the guards. It's a lot easier for the guards to score when they're getting the ball inside and it's kicked back out than when they're just passing the ball on the perimeter and rushing up a shot. You know, I think Justin Henry, is in his second season. You can kind of see a little bit more of a connection there. And I just think they just look like a team that's still talented but has matured over the last year.
No, I agree 100% with you, Dave. I've watched them actually about three or four times. We talk about the glue to a team, and Jack Kramer is definitely that glue. You mentioned that, he gives him an inside presence. But the best thing he does is he senses when to kick it out and when to try and score. And the two guards that he has, Aiden Shea and Ryan Moore, are making really good decisions as to what they should do with the ball. But they're getting it inside and playing inside out. I think the other thing about Ward that impressed me is they're able to put a little pressure on. They play a little of that 2-2-1, and they can turn teams over. I really think that right now they're either the second or third best team in the league. But we'll find out in the coming days, how accurate that prediction would be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. To me, right now, they're a pretty solid number two. We'll see what goes on. But, again, I think you got to run the offense through Kramer. And I can remember I would watch games last year, and he would go 5 minutes without touching the ball. And he's such a good passer from the paint and inside. You know, he's a true old-school pivot. And you don't see that too much anymore. And it just he makes the guards better because he's going to give them more open looks. And he can move too if Ward, which likes to run at times too, he's not gonna slow them down.
No, and the other thing that happens too there is that when the ball goes inside, the guards don't stand around either. They kind of move the open areas, open spots, and free themselves up, and he can hit the open man, and he can score inside, especially he likes to go to his left. But I have to give them a really good chance in the SEAC this year. But I think their defense has improved too. I think that what happened last year was first year coach, and he was fighting maybe some of the kids on the team as to what they wanted to do and what he wanted to do them to do. And this year they kind of buy into everything that he's been working with them on. And, as I say, I like him a lot as far as a two or three team in the SEAC this year.
It was really hard seeing Ryan Johnston at Trumbull on the sideline in crutches. It's definitely going to have a big effect on them. Sean Wilson is one of the top players in the league. And we'll see what the supporting cast does. But as we finish up here, a couple of seconds, Stanford and Staples Tuesday night. I'll be in Westport. I haven't seen Stanford yet, but it's going to be. I think that's going to be an interesting test. I think it's a good measuring stick game for Stanford.
It's definitely an I think probably the game of the year so far is to see how Stanford is able to play against Staples. So Stanford's size and quickness versus Staples' overall ability. It should be a great game, and I'll be tuning in along. You'll be right there watching the action. Just one thing on the Trumbull Ward game. I think that Trumbull showed a lot of ability coming back against a very quick McMahon team. And they got some scoring from other people. So, again, they could be one of the eight teams in the playoffs, too. But the big game this week, no question about it, will be Trumbull of Stanford and Staples, and can't wait to see it. Can't wait for the action.
Yep, and I'm sure that will be a topic of conversation next week. I want to thank our guest for today, Dave Danko, the Fairfield girls coach. I want to thank Paul Goodman and his debut there behind the controls for a great job. Mike, have a good week, and everybody out there, have a good week as well. And we'll back next Sunday for the Rudin Report Live. Take care, everybody.